gentle listeners, to Civilians Read. This is our inaugural podcast of 2010. Most of you, if you are listening, already know what the deal is, but we'll do a quick little summary. Basically, Civilians Read is a takeoff on the Treasured Canada Reads model. And so the only thing that has changed is that we have changed the faces, or perhaps the voices here. So we'll be introducing them in a second, but basically everything else will be familiar to you. We will have the same format, very similar questions, so everything should proceed as usual, and we can really identify what kind of difference it makes to have, rather than celebrities, to have civilians, and civilians who are first and foremost book lovers, who have in fact dedicated their careers to books, as we have culled all of our panelists from the publishing industry. So, without further ado, we'll introduce the panelists, although I will start with myself. My name is Jen Nock. I am going to be your host for these proceedings. I am the principal blogger at the Keeping It Real Book Club, and also I organize the Keeping It Real Book Club real-life meetings, which are very much like Canada Reads in that we ask people to come with a book that they treasure and talk about why it's great. I also, during the day, work as an associate editor at ECW Press. So now I'm going to go around to our various panelists. We are going to start with Ashley Gardner. Ashley is the manager of digital development at Dundurn. She's also the co-author of the blog For the Publishing Win with fellow panelist Nick Beauchard. And for the Civilians Read competition, she will be championing Douglas Copeland's Generation X. Hello, Ashley. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I am all right, just having trouble with the word championing. And next we have Erin Balser. Erin may be familiar to you from her Twitter handle at BooksIn140, where she reviews books in 140 characters or less. She's also the senior editor of the book section at Torontoist and the associate executive director of Book Club in a Box. She has also taken the time out from her busy schedule writing Don't Stop Believing, an unofficial guide to Glee, published by those slave drivers at ECW Press, forthcoming in September. So Erin will be representing Waste and Choice, the Jade Peony. Hello, Erin. How are you feeling before the big show?
You know, a little scared, but ready to rumble, I think.
All right. Next up, we have Sarah LeBrie. Sarah is the project coordinator at the Association of Canadian Publishers and also a KIRBC veteran and hostess extraordinaire, dedicated yogi who no doubt has been channeling her concentration for the purposes of this competition. And she will be championing Maria Endicott's Good to a Fault. Namaste, Sarah.
Namaste.
Next up, we have Natalie St. Pierre. She is a freelance editor and a literary agent's assistant. She is taking on the challenge of championing Anne-Marie MacDonald's much-celebrated Fall on Your Knees. Hello, Natalie. How are you feeling?
Oh, I'm raring to go. Challenge? I don't think so. This book sells itself.
She's throwing down already. And last but certainly not least, our lone Y chromosome in the group. We have Nick Beauchard. He is the Digital Projects Coordinator at the Association of Canadian Publishers. You also may know him as the co-founder and coordinating editor of Invisible Publishing, or the president of the Young Publishers of Canada. He also co-writes the blog For the Publishing Win with Ashley Gardner. For this competition, Nick will be championing Nikolsky by Nicholas Dickner. How are you doing, Nick?
Great. Confident. Ready to win.
All right. So, our group is ready and raring to go to get started with the discussion. And as with a normal Canada Reads competition, I've asked them to prepare one-minute pitches to sell us their book. So, we're going to get started with Ashley. We're going to follow the...
I think we should totally start on that side of the room.
All right. Nick has some serious notes he really wants to get into. Yeah. So we can start with Nick, and you have 1 minute when you hear me making a bell noise that indicates the end of your 1 minute.
Okay,
ready and go.
So when I first heard Nikolsky was a pick, I read the Walrus Review, and it set off alarms for me right away. It had some of my very big danger words in the review. Off-kilter, vagabond, fairy tale, and a great yarn. All that was missing was Cockney and Outback, which are my other two. I have a separate list for Canadian prairie fiction, which includes Good, Fault, Marina, and Endicott. So I was really surprised because I thought it was going to be really like a cutesy fairy tale, but it really has a lot of depth to it, and that's what really sucked me in right away, as it starts off with this sort of vagabond family, and a good vagabond family, like sort of desperate and trashy, but in the same way loving. And it's the book itself is a lot like Montreal. It's crazy, it's harried, it's a flurry of activity, but at the same time it carries a lot of emotional weight and depth.
Oh, he finishes off with 3 seconds to spare. Well timed, Nick. That was Nick Beauchard, who's championing Nikolsky by Nicholas Dickner, a novel that was published in French in 2005 and translated into English in 2008. So, next up, taking on a fairly heavyweight novel. We have Natalie St. Pierre, and she's going to give us her 1-minute pitch for Anne-Marie MacDonald's Fall on Your Knees. And go ahead, Natalie.
Well, as Jen Knox just said, Anne-Marie MacDonald's Fall on Your Knees is a literary heavyweight. It won the Commonwealth Writers' Prize for Best First Book, the CAA Literary Award for Fiction, and the Dartmouth Award for Fiction. And for a very good reason, many very good reasons. In the world of fiction, we talk about literary fiction and commercial fiction. Fall on Your Knees brings together the best qualities of both of these categories. Complex relationships rendered in lyrical prose and deft, suspenseful plotting. MacDonald marries deep, compelling characters and truths about family that are equally heartwarming and horrifying to early 20th century pop culture and page-turning adventure that takes you from Cape Breton Island to Jazz Age New York and back again. An eminently absorbing theology of sisterhood that follows the sanctified Kathleen, Mercedes, Francis, and Lily Piper. Fall on Your Knees is a book not read, but experienced.
Ooh! And she managed to cram it all in under a minute, which is fairly impressive for a 600-page novel, I really must say. Okay, next up, Sarah LaBrie is going to tell us why Marina Endicott's Good to a Fault is just good without faults.
Okay, here it is. 1 minute on Good to a Fault. I believe that all of Canada should read Good to a Fault by Marina Endicott because it challenges and complicates an established piece of our national identity. Canadians have an international reputation for being nice and good, and this novel examines the motives behind why that is. Endicott is a master of subtlety, and the slow-building tension she creates in the story forces the reader to identify with Clara. By the time we realize we're implicated in her conceit, we are forced to come face to face with things that we don't necessarily want to admit. This book is raw and real, and is so human it's saturated with emotion. It shows us that we aren't only defined in cities, but that real Canadianness happens in some of the smallest corners of our country, in the actions and decisions of average people. It approaches identity with sense of play, and with the oppressive force of guilt, it reveals the bad side of being good.
All of these are very well timed. I have not yet had to make a bell noise, which probably our listeners appreciate.
I think they practiced. I'm like,
I didn't practice. They practiced. Just made notes.
All right. So next up, we have Erin Balser, and she's going to be giving us her 1-minute pitch for Waste and Choice, The Jade Peony. Go ahead.
Okay, so The Jade Peony, the winner of the 1995 Trillium Award and the 1995 City of Vancouver Book Award, so perfectly captures 1940s Chinatown in Vancouver. It tells a beautiful story of three siblings as they're coming of age and trying to deal with their identities, both as Canadians and as Chinese, while emerging with their families and their issues of the Depression and of the... I can't talk because I didn't practice. of the Second World War. And Waste and Choice, it's such an amazing debut novel. There's so much emotion and power in it, and the characters are so perfectly built, and the world he creates, that Chinatown, it's so vivid. And you can just picture yourself there and being friends with these kids and exploring the streets and the city as they do. And so that's why I think that this one should read Canada Reads, is because he manages so perfectly capture a community in Canada and take you there through his book.
Thank you very much, Erin. That was Erin Balser for Waste and Choice, The Jade Peony. And now we've come to our last 1-minute pitch for another fairly heavyweight book that's quite well known, And we're going to ask Ashley Gardner to give us 1 minute for Douglas Copeland's Generation X.
Okay, well, for me, it was initially when I saw the list of Canada Reads. It was the one that I was most excited to revisit because I'd read it several years ago when I was very young. I think a few years after it came out, but I was definitely below the target demographic of Generation X. And I think for me, I had been such a huge reader my whole life, but to suddenly be exposed to something so like postmodern and Canadian and to a writer who was so accessible and around and giving readings, it was just a huge awakening for me. And I think that what's so interesting about this book is it's the oldest of all of the books that have been picked and that it's still so present in Canadian literature. I think that it defined a generation, and I think I was really curious to reread it as being the same age as the main characters.
Thank you very much, Ashley. An entire round without the bell noise. We'll see if this continues on later on. So one thing that's come up in our discussion so far is the fact that a lot of these books are fairly well known. I would say most people in this room, when they heard that list, recognized at least, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 of the books on the list. And a lot of them are major award winners or very recognized books, whether it's a book that popularized a term that then gave its name to a generation, whether it's a book that got the Oprah seal of approval, or whether it's a book that was on last year's Giller shortlist. All of the, you know, these books are all fairly well known. And so we're just going to address the elephant in the room. And I think that it's interesting to talk about how existing popularity should factor in to our consideration of these books. So I'm going to ask a few specific people on this one. We're going to start with Natalie, because I think Fall on Your Knees is probably the biggest target of these books. It's a very celebrated book. It's had a great run. Oprah gave it 2 thumbs up. So how should or shouldn't that affect its Canada Reads chances?
Well, I really don't think it should affect it at all. Well, first of all, as you said, there are a lot of well-known books here in this room. We're all in the publishing industry, and I think it's important to note that just because a book is well-known within the publishing industry, so including the wider publishing industry, so booksellers, et cetera, people who are going to buy books regardless of the climate. They buy books instead of going to the movies, what have you. These kind of big-name books for this group of people is not necessarily going to be a big-name book outside of the publishing industry. As far as award winners, I think awards do draw some outside attention, but the aim of Canada Reads isn't to uncover the hidden gems or bring light to overlooked books. If it can do that at the same time, I think that's great. But the aim of Canada Reads, as I see it, is to rally the country into this kind of collective reading, to engage readers from coast to coast to coast in a discussion about a single text. So I think that's more important for Canada Reads than talking about, you know, uncovered or hidden gems and new classics.
I think Natalie just eloquently expressed our mission statement here, so that's always nice to see. I'm now going to go to the other end of the spectrum and talk to Nick about Nicole Sweet probably being the least well-known book on the list, as that kind of French translation title, oftentimes English-speaking Canada doesn't hear about these things. So how do you think that recognition and awards should play into this competition?
Well, I'm sort of on the same page as Natalie. I agree that it is all about people reading and sort of Canadian collective experience with a certain book. However, I think that it shouldn't, I mean, it's Canada Reads, not Canada Has Read. Whereas a book that has been on the Oprah list, everybody's read it, and we've had that conversation before. Whereas Nikolsky hasn't been specifically, it hasn't been read by everyone, especially English-speaking Canada, where this is going. If this were a French contest, I would say Nikolsky should not be in it, but it's not. It's an English-language contest.
Natalie has a rebuttal.
Actually, just to point out, not everyone has read Fall on Your Knees.
Not everyone's read the Bible, should
they? Well, no, I just say, but even with a competition like this, could rally people to read even a well-known book that they had previously maybe turned their noses up at. For me, I was not drawn to Fall on Your Knees initially, and I will admit that, but I fell in love with this book from the very first page, and the reason why I read it was because of this competition.
Very fair assessment, and I think that's something that a lot of people in the room can actually agree with. It may be a book you've heard of, but one that you were meaning to get around to or you thought you never would. I think that might be something that Sarah ends up addressing in that prairies buzzword that Nick mentioned earlier, which, you know, I happen to share, let's be honest. Yes. So we talked about the books, by giving our pitches, we talked about the books that we really love, the books that we're here to represent. But now I kind of like to take it to the other end of the spectrum and talk about the books that we did not enjoy so much. So I'm going to give everyone a chance to weigh in and call out the book that was perhaps not the uplifting reading experience that they hoped it to be. So let's start. This time we're starting on Ashley's end. Go ahead, Ashley.
For me, it was Good to a Fault. I just... didn't appeal to me, the setting, the characters. I just, it just was not my kind of read. I'm glad I'm not defending it today.
Oh. Sarah, do you have an immediate rebuttal to this, or are you just going to address it in time?
Well, actually, ironically, my least favorite book, and this shocked me as much as, I mean, my least favorite book was Generation X.
Payback.
Going in, I was most excited to read that book. Like, I thought that it would really appeal to me. I was really looking forward to reading. I'd never read Copeland before. I honestly thought it would be funnier. I thought I was, maybe I had too high expectations, but it really fell short for me. It was the only book that left me wanting more.
Excellent. Okay. What about you, Erin?
Okay, I might be the only person in the world that says this, but the book I hated the most was Fall on Your Knees. I mean, there is a personal bias in that I generally am not attracted to the gigantic family saga with several generations and many, many characters and many storylines. And also, I think I was affected because I am from a town much like New Waterford. It's small, it has a similar history, and I just felt she kept beating me over the head with cliche after cliche. And my grandma was sitting there and nagging away. And so I just couldn't get past that, and I couldn't get into the story at all because it was just so much what you would expect of a book about small-town Cape Breton. And it is well written, but I couldn't get past it.
Okay, fair enough. I think the next place to go is to the advocate for that book.
Well, I'll have to save my rebuttal for later, because I do actually address some of the things that you might have raised.
Okay. But, what about your least favorite book?
You know, honestly, once I finished reading all the books, I thought it was going to be Good to a Fault. But as I'm sitting last night and I'm reflecting on these and thinking what I want most from a book, I started to think, you know, it's Generation X. Like, well, you know, Copland is too good at rendering ennui and aimlessness and disenchantment. I just couldn't connect with the characters. And that's something that has to happen for me. Good to a Fault at least elicited a response. Annoyance most of the time, yes, but I was compelled to read on, at least. And I finished Generation X because I had to for civilian reads. I finished Good to a Fault because I had to, you know?
Oh, we're going to get to that question later. We'll just note for the listeners at home that Sarah gave Natalie a lot of love during being spared.
Because
she
was only annoyed with Good to a Fault.
Okay.
That's the best response so far.
I felt the same way over Good to a Fault. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, you're not great, but I have to finish you.
All right, so we've got one person left to throw down with the book they hated. Go ahead, Nick.
Just take a shot. Good to a Fault. It was actually better than I expected. I'll say that much for it. I was really thinking it would just trudge along. And to be fair, it does. After page 200 of going to the hospital, then going home, then cleaning up the kids. And then I thought the ending was awful. It was just... Are we going to spoil the ending?
I think the spoilers are okay. We're going to operate on the assumption that anyone who's listening to these podcasts has read the books. Is that... Does everyone agree with that?
I think that's fair.
Okay,
the ending was just... There are some prairie fiction books I like, and specifically...
We get a list?
Well, there's one called The Double Hook.
Oh, okay.
That's the only prairie fiction book I like. But this ending was just so, like, happy and kind of just everything came so together. In the last, like, 5 pages, too, it felt like a sellout after all this long...
A false note.
Yeah, a false note. And we just sat through the stupid life of the stupid person for so long.
Sarah, there were a lot of stupids thrown down in there.
Yeah, sorry. I'm being over generally.
I'm going to give our two most hated, shall we call it, books and their panelists a chance to make a brief little rebuttal now, if you want to address it. So, Ashley, two people here really do not relate to Generation X. What do you have to say to that?
Well, I think I didn't find myself relating to the characters as much as being intrigued by them. And as I said, I read it again when I was younger, and I remember having this admiration of, like, you know, the older kids and all the things that they were doing. And I don't know. I just found I didn't have any of those same problems reading it. For me, it was just, why are you making those faces at me, Sarah?
Perhaps we'll bring this to a video podcast next year so that you don't miss out on any of this.
I can start taking more pictures.
I don't know, but I think to be expecting it to be funny would be false, because I don't think that it was funny as much as it was playful. I think all of the little comics in the margins and all of the little definitions, I think, gave it kind of like a zine quality and made
Sarah
it
Sarah is searching the blurbs in the back cover copy right now for the word funny.
A funny, self-conscious first novel amusingly explores the more.
Are we
going to
read wrong reviews all day?
That's not Copeland's fault. In his defense. Okay, Sarah. So lots of haters for the prairies and for the moral drama that can often ensue in them. What do you have to say?
This is what I have to say. I feel like Good to a Fault is the victim of preconceptions about prairie novels. And the thing is, W.O. Mitchell has had his day.
has he?
Prairie books aren't awful. There are more interesting ways to approach Canadian literature now. And I feel like if you go into reading Good to a Fault with the assumption that it's just another family drama, horrible Saskatchewan in winter novel, then that's the experience you're going to have. But if you really just sort of, you know, let the book happen and read with an open mind, then you find yourself more attached to the characters than you would have expected.
So you're calling things up for a self-fulfilling prophecy of sorts for approaching it.
Absolutely.
With misconceptions that then you're going to start looking for in the book, which I think is fair, having been one of those people who approached it with some serious misconceptions.
I would also like to say it has 400 pages to clear up those misconceptions.
Although not the longest book on the list, though.
That's true.
To be fair. Okay, so we were talking about kind of getting involved in stories, and Erin was saying she never got drawn into Fall on Your Knees. And I think first impressions in books are really important. In the industry, we talk about covers a lot, but also that first 10, 20 pages can be pivotal in establishing a tone, in hooking your interest, in making you decide that this is a book you want to take home from the bookstore or the library or what have you. So the question I'm going to ask everyone is, if we have to convince a reader in the first 20 pages of one of these books to keep to read on, which book is best able to do that? Sarah, you can start.
I'm going to pitch Good to a Fault on this question. And the reason...
Snickers!
I hear your snickers, but I have to say that Good to a Fault opens up with all of the action in the first couple of chapters. In the first 20 pages, you get a car crash, an impoverished nomad family, a spinster, and surprise cancer. Nothing more is gonna, like, for a good first impression, it's a really good hook. And also, I felt that Fall on Your Knees was a great first impression book for me as well, because
they're all dead now.
It's just
that's a pretty big opening line.
Yeah,
absolutely. It was gripping from the first page. I'll give that to Fall on Your Knees as well.
Well, let's go to Fall on Your Knees, Natalie. What's your argument for first 20 pager?
For Fall on Your Knees, I have to say, that really, really grabbed me in the first 20 pages. It's just something about the voice, which unfortunately is what actually repelled me about the first 20 pages of Good to a Fault. It was just that choppy, 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 choppy. Words fail. It just really, really, I thought, you know what, I don't, enough. You know, I liked Fall on Your Knees, that deadpan, matter-of-fact quality of, especially of silent pictures of that first chapter. I started fall on your knees while I was on my commute to work, and I was crossing roads in a parking lot and climbing like several flights of concrete steps with my nose in this book. I put the book away finally when I got to my office, and the first thing I did is I turned to my boss and I started gushing about that voice. And I've never been more tempted to, like, turn around, pull my book out of my purse and read during the day. And, you know, I probably would have had my office not been open concept.
This is the reason Nellie hasn't identified her employer.
But that said, I also think that the first 20 pages of Nikolsky had me as well.
Oh, it's
those ambiguities.
There are some bones out here.
There's ambiguities. Yes. And, you know, that for opening line, you know, my name is not important.
Also a great opening line, absolutely.
You know? There's so many ambiguities, and there are a couple, you know, WTF moments, and you think, how could I not want to read on? Like, where is this narrative compass going to take me? You know?
Where are you headed? I will say, I was at the Toronto Public Library Celebrates Canada Reads thing on Thursday, and Anne-Marie MacDonald was there, and she was talking about that prologue, which she read for the group, which was awesome, for an Anne-Marie MacDonald lover like myself, and she said one of her favorite things about that is that that prologue gives away everything, mm-hmm. and yet it gives away nothing. So if you go back and read that at the end, all the answers and all the big moments are pretty much in that prologue. So Nellie liked Nikolsky and the first 20 pages of. What does Nick Beauchart have to say?
It doesn't matter.
Oh, I didn't see you.
No, it's fine. I was just going to agree with Natalie about Nikolsky. I feel JP and he's a bit more of a slow burn with them. They just drop you in this world that is just so fantastical, and you don't know anything, and these people are so intriguing. They immediately grab you that you're like, I have to know who this person is, and I have to know this city the way he knows it. And so it just catches you from like the first little bit. This one, it took a little longer to get into, but it's good.
All right. Well, there'll be plenty of other ways to argue for JP and me. That they don't all have to be exploding on impact.
I always feel that I'm betraying it every time I talk.
Yeah. Loyalties run deep.
Yeah.
Nick?
You can just call me Nikolsky. That's
fine. Yeah. Nick Nikolsky.
Nikolsky, my Nicholas Dick move.
Yes.
Nick. Great.
Yeah.
I agree with everything they said about Nikolsky, actually. I can't be better myself. It's very visceral in the first few pages, too. It has such striking imagery. But I'm going to pass that along. And I actually liked Generation X, and I haven't read it for some time, I'll admit to it. But when I read it, it was perfect for the time and the place. Like, and partially, this is good for the book, and it's bad for the book in this sort of Canada Reads atmosphere, because it really struck a chord with me when I was a teenager, and I felt that sort of ennui. And if this was called Canadian Teens Read, Generation X. It's a good book, but I think it's a little dated for the times. Pull you in right away if you're in that headspace.
Yeah. That's something we can get into later about the possibility of Generation X having a little bit of an expiry date. But we'll give Ashley her chance to weigh in on the first 20 pages.
Yeah, well, I think that initially, as soon as you open up Generation X, it doesn't look like any other of the Canlit books that we're reading today. Like,
very true.
The way that it's typeset with all of the typographical marks in the first page of every chapter, and the way that all the chapters are titled, these really aggressive titles. The Sun Is Your Enemy is the first one, and then a few pages in, it just says Our Parents Had More in this big, bold font. I think that Copeland's a huge fan of design, and even as soon as you open it, I think it looks compelling, and I think that that's what brought me in reading it. On Nikolsky as well, while it was compelling as soon as you opened it, for me, I was not excited to open it because of the cover.
The fish?
All of the fish? Really? I don't know, it turned me off.
It
looks like a dad book.
Yeah. Which I think it has a lovely text design in its defense, like I think it's done well, but you see those fish, and you think dad book.
Mm.
Mm. Okay, so we've brought up a lot of food for thought today, and that's where we're going to end off our first podcast. A quick review of our panelists and their books. Ashley Gardner speaking for Douglas Copeland's Generation X. Erin Balser for Waste and Choice, The Jade Peony. Sarah Labrie for Marina Endicott's Good to a Fault. Natalie St. Pierre for Anne-Marie MacDonald's Fall on Your Knees. And Nick Beauchart for Nikolsky by Nicholas Dickner. That is the triple threat, Nick, right there. We hope you tune into the next podcast and join the discussion on the blog by all means. And I'm Jen Nock, and this was the first episode of Civilians Read 2010.